Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
After we got off the air yesterday in the afternoon that we had heard that rock and roll icon Eddie Van Halen had died on Tuesday, didn't even really know he was sick. And we've got a special guest on the air with us to talk more about it.
Yeah, Eddie had been fighting cancer for some time and it had been fine lately. And then all of a sudden, things apparently went very bad very quickly. And to look at the bright side of all of this, we have Bo Phillips on the line with us. Bo has done it all in radio. Disc jockey, station manager, VP, GM, has been, done program directing, and for a while was senior vice president of marketing at VH1. And has, as you might imagine from all that experience, some great stories. And they're all in the book called I Killed Pink Floyd's Pig. Bo Phillips, what a pleasure to talk to you again. How you been?
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure to talk to you. And I want to talk, first of all, about the book for folks who are not familiar with I Killed Pink Floyd's Pig. The story that you have about Van Halen kicks off the book. And in a way, it sort of kicked off the idea for the book in the first place, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. It's actually the first chapter in the book is the story about the Van Halen stripper invasion. But the book, I Killed Pink Floyd's Pig, is actually a collection of 35 stories, a couple about Van Halen, and Zeppelin and AC/DC and Pink Floyd and other bands like that.
So how do you decide what to put in a book like that?
That's a great question. You know, after hanging out with, you know, people who would say, oh, you know, I love the Stones, and I go, well, let me tell you a funny story about the Stones. I just had a lot of encouragement to write, you know, write these stories down, and that's how it started. I would write down, you know, story about Van Halen or story about Keith Richards or, you know, and then I started building it out into a paragraph of all the different stories that I remembered and then kind of fleshed them all out until I had a whole collection of stories and then weeded through them to try to, you know, get it down to the best, the funniest, the most outrageous stories.
Yeah, you know, that was such a great time, too. And we'll have you tell the story because that was at a time when everything was done over the phone. Cell phones didn't exist. Email didn't exist. You made phone calls. You built relationships with people and you just asked for favors every so often. And you got some great stuff from just doing that, from just picking up the phone. That's where the story with Van Halen starts.
Yeah, it was at a time, too, where, you know, there was no satellite radio. There was no MP3 downloads. That bands knew that if they had an album out, that the only way that it was going to get heard is if the radio station played it. So bands used to come to town and want to hang out. I knew that they wanted to hang out with me because I was kind of the direct ticket to getting airplay. But by the same token, I enjoyed the ride and got to make some good friends out of it. And the guys in Van Halen, both in the Roth era and the Hagar era, were a lot of fun.
Let me just ask real quick before we talk more about the book on that note, because I think as radio people, that's always fascinating to see how people were able to convince you to get their stuff on the air and to get noticed. What impressed you or what would, you know, what would really win you over at that time?
Well, it was really not research-based, which, as you know, radio has become very heavily researched. It was more instinct. It was more putting people around you that were kind of in the demo, as they say, who got the music, knew what the radio station sounded like, and we trusted our ears. And we'd say, this is a band that we think we should go for it and play. We missed some, but we nailed a lot. But it was really very fun and pure, where it was really the quality of the music that carried the day.
It was also a giant party a lot of the time, too, which brings us right into Van Halen and your experiences with them. So where were you when you found out, what radio station were you working for when you found out that they were coming to town and picked up that phone?
I was at KISW in Seattle, a big, still dominant rock station in town, and we were about to celebrate our 10th anniversary. And I saw on the concert calendar that Van Halen was coming to Seattle, and it was right square on top of the station's anniversary, and they were there for two sold-out nights. So I called their manager, and I said, look, when they're in town, they're going to have some time. Come by the radio station. We'll have some beers. We'll put you on the air. You can play some tunes. You can talk to listeners. We can have some fun. And the manager said, Bo, you know, I love you guys. I'd love to do that, but they're just too busy right now. This is about the time when Van Halen's second or third album was out, and they were just completely blowing up. And he said, you know, we love you, but we're sorry. We're just not going to have the time this trip. Fast forward a few months. It's the day of the concert, and the receptionist at the radio station puts out an all call over the PA and says, everybody look outside. And I pull back my curtain, and I see a whole stream of police motorcycles with sirens blazing and lights flashing, and four of them pull up right in front of the radio station, followed by four limos, just bam, 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 right one behind each other. The limos stop, and the doors swing open, and in the first limo, out pops David Lee Roth with a stripper on each arm, followed by Eddie Van Halen in the next limo, and he's holding a giant birthday cake for the radio station, and people behind him are holding cases of champagne and party poppers, and it was insane. So there was the band, and then there was, you know, half a dozen strippers that they brought with them. They walk right into the radio station. Now, John, you can relate to this, because this wouldn't happen now. They walked through the front door. They went right past the receptionist, right down the hallway, opened the studio doors, and said, we're here to take over the radio station.
So that is rock and roll.
God, do you still have audio of that?
Oh, boy, sure. And pictures, which I'll share with you later, because they were too hot for my book. I couldn't include some of the real hot ones. But, so what happens is they get on, they turn the monitors up to 10. The strippers are standing on top of the console with what you have is your studio board and all of that. And they're taking their clothes off and they're dancing, and everybody's got a bottle of champagne in their hand. No one's bothering with glasses. Everybody's got a bottle, and it looks like the Super Bowl party. They're dumping it over each other's head. Then they bring out the cake, which was a really wonderful cake, and no one's using plates or forks. Everybody's grabbing handfuls and rubbing it in each other's faces. And the band just took over and had a blast on the air talking about us and about the relationship that we had. So I find myself in a completely cram-packed control room. Half the people in there I didn't even know. And I look next to me, and I'm standing next to Eddie. And I look over, and I said, what is this? And he looks at me, he goes, we wouldn't forget your birthday. And it was a wonderful surprise. They stayed for a couple of hours. We didn't play any commercials. It was just too insane. I kept telling our sales manager, I'm sorry, but how do I stop this? But they were a blast, and they were always just a party on wheels. Eddie was always always was the shy one. He was all about the music. Roth and Sammy Hagar were the businessmen about the band. They were the ones that said, we need to put out a double album or a live album or a greatest hits album, and they were the thoughtful business people. Eddie was all about the music. That's all he really cared about, and he was a very shy, humble guy.
And you mentioned that there are a couple of stories about Van Halen in the book. Talk about your experiences with them in those sort of quieter moments, when it wasn't a party full of strippers.
Well, I'll tell you this. I got to know Sammy Hagar really well. In fact, Sammy wrote the foreword for my book. And there were times in the early days of Sammy's career where he and I would be sitting backstage, and he had just gotten finished playing a show to maybe 20% of the house being full, you know. Just a lot of empty seats, and it's like, what's it going to take for us to happen? And then to see what actually did happen with that band, that they became the biggest band in the land. They were always about the show and always about making it a real party for everybody, whether it was the Roth days or the Sammy days. And there weren't a lot of quiet private moments with them because they were always going 100 miles an hour. And if you wanted to hang with the band, you just kind of jump on board and hit the gas.
Put in perspective for me where they fit in the landscape of music, where they stand out, and why.
Well, I think you have to kind of break it down by era. You know, when they broke in the late 70s, they really kind of rendered all of the previous bands irrelevant. I mean, they came in louder and harder and more flamboyant. I mean, they were all about the show. And they really changed the dynamics of what a rock concert was. So, you know, in the legions of rock concerts and then what's happened, I mean, there was nobody bigger than Van Halen, you know, through the 80s, at least through the middle 80s. And they spawned all the hair bands, all the spandex bands, you know, all the Def Leppards and the White Snakes and the bands like that all took their cue from Van Halen. And they were all out there with Aquanet, and all of them were wearing, like I said, you know, spandex pants and open shirts and loud and wild, and it was kind of reflective of the time in the 80s. But, you know, to try to put them up there, I mean, Van Halen is a top 10 rock band for sure of all time.
Oh, no doubt, and especially with Eddie. I mean, what Eddie meant to guitar playing, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday about this, that he... when he invented that style of playing with both hands on the fretboard, the tapping and all of that stuff, I mean, it was such a dramatic change. And you look at the influence, you have Eddie doing his thing in hard rock. You have Steve Lukather doing that exact same style on Michael Jackson, on Beat It, or not on Beat It, on Thriller, I guess it was. And then you had guys like Stanley Jordan using the same tapping style in jazz. I mean, it just worked, and everybody took it and got creative in all these different directions. That's true influence right there.
Yeah, and Eddie was an artist. The other guys in the band, I mean, they're good players, but Eddie was the artist. He was the one who was always driven about the music. He wasn't really about writing hit records. Eddie was the guy that lived to play guitar. What's kind of funny and ironic is that I live now in Pasadena, California, about a mile from Eddie's childhood home. And every time I drive by that home, I think, man, if those garage walls could talk.
Yeah,
for sure.
A lot of history.
Real quick, throat cancer, I would think, is always a fear for someone who uses their voice for a living. What did you know about his health over the years?
Interesting question. I kind of travel in the circles of, you know, artist managers and things like that, and I knew for a long time that Eddie had had mouth cancer and throat cancer, tongue cancer, I believe. He was a heavy lifetime smoker. But he claims, Eddie always claimed that he used to play with a metal guitar pick and that he used to play with it between his lips sometimes when he was doing, like you were talking about, the hammering on the fretboard. And he claims that it was actually the metal pick that gave him the mouth cancer. But it's been on and off for a long time. Last year, there was a big rumor that Van Halen would reunite, and I was told by people on the inside that'll never happen, that Eddie's in no shape to do that. And then what happened, I'm told, is that the mouth cancer and the throat cancer just metastasized into his brain and other organs. But he's been hanging on and not well for quite a while.
Yeah, it's too bad. And again, it was just a guy who changed the game in terms of rock and roll and just in terms of guitar playing as well. And the book, I want to go back to this, I Killed Pink Floyd's Pig, full of amazing stories like the Van Halen stripper invasion and so much about every band you love. They're going to be in, there for you in the book. 35 different stories from Bo Phillips. If people want to get a hold of the book, where's the best place to do it?
Well, you can go on Amazon. I Killed Pink Floyd's Pig. If you want to just get a preview of what it's like, I've posted kind of some sample videos. I did a TED talk about the healing power of music, and one of the stories that I tell is about Van Halen. There's also some stories about Keith Richards and Pink Floyd and Paul McCartney and Eric Clapton and all of that on the website. So if you went to Pink Floyd's Pig with no apostrophes or dashes or dots, just pinkfloydspig.com, you can get some samples of the stories in there. But it's a, you know, it's not going to make the world forget about Shakespeare, but the book is a lot of fun.
It is.
And if you are a fan of the music of those bands, these are stories that have never been told and never been heard. It's been a real thrill for me and hopefully for the people who read it.
No doubt about it. And it's so much fun. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's a great book. So get it. I Killed Pink Floyd's Pig. Bo Phillips, always a pleasure talking to you, my friend. Take care.
Great Thank stories. Thanks for being here.
Sure. Take care.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.